right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. This is Mark Sussman. You're tuning into the Inspire Possibility Show. I like that idea of to inspire possibility, because when I'm inspiring possibility in you, I'm inspiring possibility in myself. And what I like to do is invite different individuals that I hear about through publicists or just people in my circle. And sometimes I've had them on the show before. And the person today is somebody that has written a number of books. She's very mystical, spiritual, visionary, somebody who hopefully we can learn a lot from. She has a new book out. Her name is Lynn Cockrum Murphy. Her new book is Unfolding the Mystery of Self. We are never alone. And that kind of is something that I thought about, because I so many times we might say to ourselves, I feel alone. And there's nobody in my life. And so I'm sure that Lynn has something to add to us about this idea, are we really alone? So thank you, Lynn, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Oh, and thanks so much for having me today.
So I'm sure that you have some what about this idea? You say we're really never alone, or you at least raise that question. And tell me more about that, what you mean by that. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people say, wow, I feel lonely. And are you saying that we shouldn't feel that way? Or,
well, that's a good question, too. And I felt lonely in the early part of my life. And, again, that was healed, that was remedied for me. But this is also talking about the fact that there is such a world that we don't see that is full of teachers and masters and guides and angels and archangels and all kinds of beautiful beings that are just waiting for us to acknowledge them, ask something of them, bring them into our lives. So for me, it's happened in all kinds of ways, from having a relative pass and then come and to me in a meditation and say, thank you for doing so-and-so when I was ill. Or another relative who passed coming to visit and to offer to help me with my work. So it's pretty wide open as to why I think we're never alone. And I give an example in the book of my first time that I remember being visited, and what I saw and felt, and so how that started for me.
Mm-hmm. So when you say visited, what do you say somebody that passed you in a meditation or in a quiet time, you felt visited. What do you, and I always say, to somebody I'm having a conversation, I always say, what do you mean? Because I have my thoughts about that. I know other people have their thoughts. And so what exactly do you mean when you say you're being visited?
For me, it is the sense that someone's there standing next to me or wants my attention. And it can be, my grandmother would often show up while I was doing dishes. I think when we're doing rote activities, it's a little easier for our awareness to pick up on these things. Meditation is a great time to pick up on those kinds of things, because there's so much going on all around us, but when we're in that quiet place, then we can hear it better. So those are some of the ways. Trying to think how else. I mean, I've also had the experience of hiking on a trail up by Monument Valley, so Indian lands, and hiking on a trail and feeling someone come up behind me who wants to attack. And that was a whole different kind of energy, but someone who was still living there in spirit and still fighting a battle. So there are all kinds. And, you know, I mentioned in the book that a lot of my family members have had these experiences. My sister wrote out for me the experience she had after our mother passed away. So that's in the book. And I talk about my experience after my mother passed away. But I think it's pretty common because my grandmother had one with, after her husband passed away, she went home after the funeral and she heard him call her from the bedroom of the house. And she had to go back there and look because it sounded so much just like his voice.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that what you're saying is you think everybody has this capacity to hear these voices? Or perhaps they feel it inside themselves, or they just feel like maybe in a dream they're in a dream and somebody comes to them in a dream. Is that kind of what you're saying too? And
it can be. It sure can be in a dream. I also think that this is real and can be real for everyone because I teach classes called Theta Healing, and in those classes people move from unawareness or minimal awareness to great awareness, to where you know, they can do readings and tell people about the angels and the guides that they see with the person, and people learn how to do that in one day. It's pretty miraculous.
Now let me ask you a little bit about your background. I know that in some of the stuff I've seen before, you've been quite a spiritual seeker. You've studied Buddhism and all kinds of things. Can you tell me a little bit of your spiritual background in terms of the things you're into? And what I'm also curious about is that there's usually like a point in somebody's life when I coming back almost to what you said about feeling we're never alone, to where a feeling I get sometimes is you wonder if there's more to life than you're experiencing. And so that question we start to ask, and you know, is there more to life than I'm experiencing? And what about, for example, some people talk about soulmates and that soulmates live on even though maybe physically they're not in their body anymore. And so I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on that.
We're supposed to be part of soul families, and that we tend to join up with those people again and again in our lives to learn, to grow, to resolve things, to work out karma, you know, things that we've created that we want to resolve. And those are our soul families, and within that are people that we feel really close to, and those will be the soulmates that show up in our lives. Though, and they're people that we kind of click with right away. But even there's even a little more distant ones, because I remember a woman, a friend of a friend, walked into the room, and I looked at her, and I was like, my goodness, it's as if I already know you. And she said, yeah, I feel that way about you too. But we had not ever met before. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to life. You know, we're taught, particularly in our education system and our culture, that what you see is what you get. It's hard and fast. This is all there is. And people even say that, this is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, I don't think so. Look at our fascination with the paranormal.
Right.
Look at what happened with Shirley MacLaine, who started writing books and talking about everything from chakras to aliens to past lives. It was great.
Huge. Yeah. No, I remember when all of a sudden She was, everybody talked about, wow, did you hear what Shirley MacLaine said? She was huge.
Yeah, she really was. She's so cute. And then you asked about my background. I did, I was raised in Christian churches in Northern California. And then none of them, it's funny, my family didn't settle with one. Like, they took me to the Methodist and they took me to the Nazarene. But then my grandparents were Catholic, and so I got a little rounded experience there. But when I was 17, because of the craziness in my family and my seeing that they didn't have solutions, they had a religion, but they didn't have a faith that carried them and supported them and fed their soul. And so I said, what else is there? Why is this not working? And that's when I studied Buddhism, and I became a Buddhist at 17. And I did that for several years, which is great because it laid a really nice foundation and gave me understanding of things in life that I didn't understand prior to that. But then I moved on, and I studied with a New Age group, and then I moved into I guess what would be called a commune, and in Oregon.
Where was
in Oregon?
In Oregon.
Grants Pass, Oregon. And it, we had, I don't remember how many acres, 5 or 10 acres outside of town. And it was very much New Age, but the minister that led it was also Pentecostal. So we were getting both influence. It was really rich. And then since then, I've studied with New Age groups, but I've also taken a class in Kabbalah.
What do you mean by New Age groups? What do you mean New Age groups?
No, New Age groups. There are other churches
again,
that I've studied with.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Because, you know, as everybody has a different – people use so many words and have different meanings again. So so for you, what is a New Age group, I mean, in your world?
More metaphysical. Here. Yeah, metaphysical groups. There was a church in Grants Pass that I went to for several years. I don't think it exists anymore. Here in Arizona, I've gone to a lot of different churches, but I don't stay. It's like they have something to say to me, and I benefit from it. I grow, I learn, and then I move on. So New Vision Center, which is an offshoot from Religious Science. I guess it's what Religious Science has evolved into.
And what is it now you're saying? What's the offshoot of Religious Science that you're talking about?
It's a New Vision Center of Spiritual Growth. And there's two of them in Phoenix. And also Unity Church has worked.
Right.
You know, that's, because I enjoy a place that encourages me to look for God within.
Right.
And that doesn't tell me I'm a sinner repeatedly. So
right.
That works better for me.
No, I'm into those too. I'm probably into a lot of them you talked about. And so my experience is that you're kind of, in a way, brought up with certain belief systems around religion, and at some point you say, you know what, I'm not buying that, and it's not really working for me, and then you start to seek out looking for your own truth. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this show have been on that path where the story that you brought up with is no longer working for you, and you have to more or less find your own truth, and you start this spiritual quest. And I think that a lot of us that are kind of on this quest, we kind of meet up with each other sooner or later.
It is really nice to meet up with people that are on their own spiritual quest. It's very satisfying.
Yeah, it is. And then we write books.
We share it. Well, one of the points in the book is that we really have the freedom, fortunately in this country, to do our own thing, and that we get to have our spirituality without religion. Or you can have religion too if that suits you. But we've really gone beyond from tradition to do your own thing. And so for me, that means studying a lot of different religions and finding the greatness in all of them. And knowing that, you know, they have a purpose, they have a place, there's something I can get there, and I don't have to stay. I really like the freedom we have in our spiritual path.
Mm-hmm. So, like, back to this idea of when you studied, so here you are, you've been studying all these different paths and looking for your own truth, and now this is your second book, correct, this new book?
Yes.
And tell us about your first book.
The first book was titled Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, and it was really about the early part of my life and what occurred that I think set me up to be a seeker, and and the practices that I took on that led to the second book. So the first book is about trauma and tragedy, growing up in Northern California, from dysfunction, family dysfunction, and alcoholism, but also just other things. I mean, my house burned down when I was 2.5. That wasn't due to alcoholism. That was a faulty furnace. But it killed 3 people, and I was the only one who lived through that.
Wow.
So, you know, things like that that set the tone for my life. It created great compassion in me for people who are suffering. But as I studied Buddhism later on, and I was really tired of suffering myself from my, you know, the kind of home I lived in, a lot of violence and such. So then as I studied Buddhism, it was like, wow, there's a reason for everything. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
I can't just go around blaming other people.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
You know, this idea there is a reason for everything. I mean, I actually say that in my first book and talk about it in the second book, too. But what's your thought about that? There's a reason for everything. Do you think that? And what's your thoughts about it? But is there a reason for everything?
I do. I really do think that.
I mean, like, for example, some people might talk about, well, karmically, you know, you're living out your karma from a last past life, something like that. But what are your thoughts about it? Like, when something happens and you go, there's a reason for everything, and do you think that's kind of a harsh thing to say to somebody? They have cancer. A heart attack, or their child died. I mean, do you think it's kind of a harsh thing to say to them?
Really important to be sensitive at those times and not be so blunt. And I would never say to someone who isn't asking what I think about that. But who do ask.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm implying is not necessarily people who ask, but it's more or less, for example, I hear about, they're in, I don't know where you use the word new age. I mean, I've heard just in a lot of circles, let me put it that way, I'm not going to label the circles, but somebody gets cancer and they talk about, well, they created the cancer themselves, and as opposed to it happened. And that's the thing that I know. I'm kind of the sense right now that things happen, and we don't know anything for sure. It's like life's, what I've come to is like life's a big mystery. And so when you say to somebody, "Wow, you know, you created," but some people cop it. Well, I created my cancer, to where then they become a victim. Or having this burden that they not only have cancer, but then they feel responsible for creating it.
Right.
Where are you with that?
Well, I think first it's really important to not use that as something to beat yourself up with. But if in truth we are creators of our own world and our own life, then everything that we create has been created for a reason. So I'm currently working with a man who is in the process of healing from cancer, in the process of receiving radiation. He's already had the surgery to remove the tumor. And we are working to because he was told by three different readers, spiritual readers, before he went for a diagnosis, he was told that he was seriously sick and he needed to change his life, that he had given away too much of himself. He had done certain things that allowed cancer to be created in his own life. So we're in the process of working on that, and part of the process is to look at what is it that opened him up to receive a mutated cells that then could kill him. So it's a gentle but honest process. I don't bring things up that he's not ready to hear, and I remind him when he says things like my cancer, that
mm-hmm.
it might be healthier to call it the cancer or a cancer or this cancer
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
rather than owning it, since he's trying to move it out of his body and out of his life. So these are big questions that you ask, and they're really important. You know, a person who's lost a child, the only things that are appropriate to say is, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. What can I do? What can I do to help? How can I be there for you? I'm working with another person who is in hospice, and she is 89 years old. So she's not going to get well, I don't think. But
mm-hmm.
instead,
right.
what we're looking at is, how do you find peace with yourself and your life at this point? How do you discover what might be positive on the other side, not be afraid, and so on? So really big questions that you're asking, but I do believe in taking responsibility for every aspect of our lives. Because I did, when I was younger, think that I should blame everybody, my family in particular. And now I see, no, I created this, and look at the amazing things. I was a school teacher for 30 years and worked with mildly disabled students, mostly kids who couldn't read. And I was able to help so many kids who lived in alcoholic, dysfunctional households and kids who were being abused. What a wonderful thing that when they would trust me enough to tell me, and then I could go to the school counselor and say, we need to get this child some help, and the process would be started. And I think that happened in part because I had been in that kind of a situation as a child. So I got to give it away, you know, the goodness that I had, that had grown in me from my pain, I got to give that away and help others.
Mm-hmm. So it was preparing you in some way.
Uh-huh. Everything
right.
happens for
kind
a reason.
Of,
even when I would
yeah.
have a 5-year-old child in my classroom who was crying because of abuse,
mm-hmm.
I felt grateful because it just helped me heal another piece of my own history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us about where people can get you. Tell us where people can get your book.
It's available two ways. Amazon, of course, has everything, and other bookstores can order it. But you can go to my website, www.lynn-cockrum-murphy.com. Yes, I have a really long name. So at the LynnCockrumMurphy.com website, you can get a free chapter so you can read it and see how it sits with you before you order it. You can order through the website. Both books have a free chapter, so whichever book attracts you. There are quotes from the books there. There are things that other people have said about the books. There are some reviews. So you can really get a good feel for if this is for you. And the other thing that's on the website are the classes that I offer. I'm doing one on Unfolding the Mystery of Self that'll be posted on the website and announced through my newsletter if someone wants to sign up for my newsletter, so they can get the freebies and then the classes too if they want.
Mm-hmm. And so these are all also, and you do a lot of virtual work, so people, they want to have healing sessions with you, they can do that all over the phone
yes.
or the internet.
Yeah. Yes, right, Skype or something.
By the way, I was
in
looking
Phoenix. Go ahead.
In Phoenix. Yeah, I was looking mm-hmm. at, remember I talked about things happen for a reason? This is what I
yeah.
wrote in my first book, Dancing on the River. Things happen for a reason. You might be disappointed at times. Some things just aren't meant to be. When one door closes, walk through the one that's open. That's what I wrote. Dancing in the river.
Oh, I like that. That's so true. Walk through the one that's open. Other people stand there and bang their head against the door, and it's not necessary.
I know exactly. So, what about you? What would you say to people right now in terms of what advice would you give to people right now in terms of if you had one thing to say to people to remember you by? And I said, okay, I want to remember Lynn Cochran Murphy. I know she's got a long name. I don't know if I'm going to remember the whole name, but maybe I can remember one thing she said to me. What would you want them to take away from this conversation?
Okay. What I like for everyone to know about themselves is the beautiful being of light that they actually are, that we wear bodies and we wear masks, but underneath that is a continuous, infinite being, and I see that in you, and I hope that you come to see that too, because it's extraordinary and it changes your life.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that your book would really be a companion for them to kind of to read and have it by their side to kind of remind them of that message.
I think so. Thanks for saying that, Mark.
Yeah, because I could just tell by the energy. If some books have energies, and yours definitely have that inviting energy. So what about, what right now is inspiring you?
Oh, this new class that I created, the Unfolding the Mystery of Self workshop. It's four workshops, and in it we do meditations. I give people different kinds of meditations because you know how people resonate to different ones, different styles. And we discuss some of the quotes from the book. Those quotes are also posted on Goodreads. And then we have a discussion. It's very experiential. And people yesterday were so wild, they didn't want to get up out of their chairs and leave. And that feeds my soul. So I feel like I'm in a good place and I'm able to share it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what other nuggets do you have to share in a remaining few minutes that we have?
Well, I think it's important to talk about the fact that we are on the brink of oneness. So the things that I talk about in here, that it is not it's not a fluke. You know, the things that you wrote about in your book, more and more of this is coming forward, and people are having experiences that they've never had before. So I was looking for maybe a quote from the book that I might use at this point. Let's see. I don't really see something I can pull out of the book out of the top of my head. But I do see since 2012, that really was a turning point. And we're in a sped up land of possibilities for spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I like is, you know, Lynn, excuse me, or what you're talking about looking for your book for a quote. I like what's on what I have in front of me, a cover of your book, and it says, in purple, we are never alone. We actually exist without limits. Our potentials are apparent. Each one of us is different. Each is unique in how we manifest our potential and how we see it in ourselves or how others will see it or not see it in us. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
I've posted that one on Twitter also, and it gets reposted because people resonate with that.
There it is.
Thank you. I mentioned some other points in the book that the only time that I'm truly happy and have inner peace is when I'm actively involved in connecting with whatever you want to call it, totality, source, creator, God.
Right.
That's where happiness really lies for me. You know, shopping and getting something new, a new car, short-lived happiness, really. It amazes me. But in that time, that quiet time, that peaceful time, whether it's in meditation or in nature, That's what really feeds my soul, and I bet that's true for a lot of people.
It is. It is. I just had a number of people now that have been on my show have talked about happiness. That's been their topic, and to where it's an actual and to equate it to people are happy are going to be going to enjoy life more and be more productive. And it's mm-hmm. we're running out of time here, so I want to thank you for being my guest and having this conversation, and the journey continues as we keep reconnecting with these kindred souls that bless our life. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for your commitment to being on the path and being a guide for others. So in the meantime, to everybody, until next week, journey on.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.